If you really want to go somewhere phenomenal tonight, go to Gringo's. Gringo's Tex-Mex, because that's the restaurant chain that this man has created. And after you hear this, you're going to want to go to Gringo's, okay? In April, I went on a very special trip. My wife came home one day, I don't know, it must have been December or January or something, and she listens to a man by the name of
Michael Berry.
Michael Berry. I'm pausing, honey, for effect. I'm putting this together. I didn't forget his name. Michael Berry. See what I mean? She listens to him 24/7. So, by the way, Denise Partridge in the house. She's going to be taking the stage tonight. Or not tonight, tomorrow. Anyway, so she comes home. She says, Michael Berry is doing a special VIP trip to West Palm Beach, and we're having dinner at Mar-a-Lago. You know where my mind goes. We're going to meet Donald Trump. Well, he wasn't supposed to be there. We didn't know if he was going to be there. But as I shared earlier, I put myself in the position to meet Donald Trump, and I got a picture with Donald Trump. But the best outcome of that trip was not meeting Donald Trump. The best outcome of that trip was meeting Russell. And Russell is a phenomenal leader. As I mentioned before, they have 22 phenomenal restaurants. He's a phenomenal business owner. They're opening two more restaurants. He came from very humble means, and today he's very successful. His team members love him. He's a man that has been there, done that, and is still doing it today. And he's going to share the plan with you. Russell Ibarra. I want to do something special before you get started. I need, Sherry, I need you to videotape this for me and send it to me, okay?
That's fine.
Yeah. So I need somebody to videotape this for me and send it to me, okay? All right, you got it? Austin, come on up here. All right. This man, the real thing you need to know about this man is that he married way up. Now, she's not tall, but she's way up there, okay? And today is your anniversary?
Her birthday.
Oh, her birthday.
Yes.
Okay. So we want to say happy birthday to Monica. You are phenomenal. Can everybody say happy birthday, Monica? Turn around. All right.
All right.
Give it up to Russell Ibarra. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. I should have never had a high sodium meal before speaking. I have, my mouth is parched. All right, thank you for the kind words, Howard, and thank you for this invitation. I'm gonna share with you today a story that I never get tired of telling because it was never supposed to happen. And it's a complete miracle, and I tell myself, Had I been transported in time from the time I opened up Gringo's to today, I would have thought I was on some sort of drug. I prefer to be called the Master Enchilada Roller because it puts me in my place. That's where I started. I started in the kitchen working for my father, who gave me my first job at age 14, washing dishes and working in the kitchen and also working in the front. You can follow me or stalk me. I may have to go down a little bit because I can't read the. Can you go to a large screen on that? You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and that's my email address. I'm always open to answering any questions someone may have about their business and try to give you some kind of insight what limited insight I could offer, depending on what your industry or business is. So our one purpose, our uno purpose at Gringos is to enrich lives one taco at a time by serving the highest quality Tex-Mex at the absolute best price possible. These are our five core values that I established about 20 years ago because I knew where I wanted to go as a company, but I also wanted our team members to know the direction of the company. Building guest relationships one meal at a time, meaning every single meal we serve is important. Very important. As a matter of fact, back in 2006, we had started a company or a different brand called Gringo Seafood Kitchen. We were open for 1 year and 3 months, closed it. And the takeaway there is it would have been much cheaper for me to go across the street to Papa Do to have a seafood platter because it was a seafood concept spelled G-R-I-N-G-A-U-X, but it had been cheaper to go across the street. I refer to it today as my $2.8 million seafood platter. Fostering honesty and respect among our team members. A company cannot go anywhere unless there is mutual respect between the employer and the employees, period. It will never go anywhere, and that has to be there first and foremost. Reinvesting in our team members and local community. That is the cornerstone of our success, and I'm going to share a little bit more about that a little later, and you'll understand why. Developing a relationship of trust with our vendors. Our vendors are very important to us. They keep us supplied with our standards, our specs, and in return, we pay them very promptly. We pay all of our invoices, non-food, upon receipt, food invoices weekly. And we pay so well that we have been known to pay invoices twice. We've since fixed that, though. We have fixed that. And of course, if we take care of 1 through 4, never being satisfied, always trying to raise the bar and improve and find ways to improve. Most of us in the room, when you visualize success, this is what you think of, right? But we all know what it really looks like. So this is kind of the genesis of Gringo's Tex-Mex, August of 1992. This was a building that our family owned. And it was on the market for $250,000. No one wanted to touch it. I was busy running a tortilla factory that I started in the 80s. That's a whole nother story that I won't have time to share with today. But I was busy doing something else. And actually, I had gotten out of the restaurant business, never to get back in it ever again in my entire life. The history of that building was it had been a steakhouse for 8 months. It was an El Toro family restaurant for 7 years. There was an old Galveston seafood restaurant for 3 years, and then Mangiafinco's Italian restaurant for 2 months. Now, the reason it was only 2 months was when he bought it, he did a lease purchase, not lease with the option to purchase, but a lease purchase. So he leased it and purchased it at the exact same time. At the end of 60 days, his earnest money was due. He saw the handwriting on the wall, and he's out of there after 2 months. So we get the building back. And one of my responsibilities working at the tortilla factory was I had to write the check out for this particular property, $4,852.10 a month. It's a number that is seared on my brain for eternity because of the difficulty of making that payment. And of course, in today's dollars, it's right under $10,000. On December the 15th of 92, I'd gone to Wells Fargo to open up a business account. I didn't have the cash to open it. So I charged on my credit card, $200, and that was kind of the beginning of a business venture. Our challenges were there, as you can imagine. We only had maybe $10,000. I just put $10,000. I don't even know if it was even $10,000. Maybe been $5,000. $10,000 budget. We did not have a proven concept. Used furniture and equipment, and even today, if you walk into one of our Jimmy's or even Gringo's for that matter, you'll see a mixed match of chairs because when we opened up Gringo's, none of our furniture matched, and it didn't matter. It actually worked out better because if a chair broke, we could replace it with anything and no one would ever know the difference. So, and then we also, no liquor license. So we opened in January, and we didn't get a liquor or a beer license until about May of that year. And again, our goal was to serve the highest quality Tex-Mex and offer it the absolute best value that we could. I've been asked before, how do you know you're serving the highest quality Tex-Mex or the best Tex-Mex or what have you? And like I told them, this person that asked me that question, because it took me a day to think about it, because I said, yeah, how did I know? Well, it was the best that I knew how to make at that time. And like I tell people today, I don't have 1 year of experience and 29 years of repetition. I have 30 years of experience because every single day I wake up, I try to get better. So with our limited budget, we painted the building. And the logo there, that was the first Gringo's logo. I'm wearing the latest and greatest that we just launched 3 or 4 months ago. We had to get away from the Vegas sign for different reasons. But anyway, one of our waiters, we had two waiters when we opened, two servers. And one of them was an artist, and he kind of just drew that in the building, and that became our logo. Now, if you see those two windows on the left side, there was a mirror image or mirror dining room on the other side. We did not have the money to open that side. We only opened the left side, 25 tables, four seats per table, 100 guests. And on January the 11th of 93, we did $580. And by the way, when I had the idea to open up Gringo's, I was told I was crazy, stupid, and I was going to fail. And that was just my family telling me that. So with that much encouragement, we went ahead. And $580, the first day of sales, not a whole lot. And on the second day, we did the same. Now, on the third day, it was a Wednesday, I received a call from one of my siblings who thought it was a crazy idea to open this place. He asked me, hey, how much did y'all do? And I told him how much we did Monday, and I told him how much we did Tuesday. He said, that's it? Close the damn place. We did more the first time we were there. And my response, and I remember this, I said, listen, so long as those $580 worth of guests are happy and pleased, they'll come back. And they've been coming back. Our first month, we did 27,000. And I don't know why this is all messed up on the PowerPoint, but the first, 93 was 475, and 94, we almost doubled it. Or we did double it. And then 95, 1.3, and 96, 1.8. So we're on our way. Now, in the December of 95 is when I started plans to develop the second location. Today, in 2022, we'll hit revenues of about $140 million. We have 15 Gringos, 4 Jimmys, a Burger Libre, a lunchbox, and 1 Burritos that we franchised. I heard everybody talking about franchising earlier. We franchised, started the concept in 2008, and we sold it in 2012 to focus back on the full-service restaurants because our AUV, or average unit volume, is one of the highest in the industry. And this has kind of been our sales graph since the beginning. Our AUV is 7.5 and climbing, mainly because of inflation, but it's climbing, and it's one of the highest in the industry. We opened up College Station recently, and it was the strongest opening to date. It's a great market, but it was the first time one of our stores hit $1 million in less than 30 days. The success of Gringo's has allowed me to live the life of a rock star. I have flown in private jets all over, and here we were landing in Florida to go hang out on South Beach with a small group, 8 of us to be exact. That's all the plane held. And at one time I got a crazy idea and I actually bought a jet. Changed the tail number to 193JC because we opened on January of 93, and JC for Jimmy Changa. Of course, we called it Jimmy One. But when it was in the air, it was Jesus Christ. Because it was a 91. I've met some phenomenal people over the years. John Paul DeGioia is one of my heroes. He's the one that started John Paul Mitchell Products, but also Patron Tequila, which he just recently sold for like $3.7 billion to Bacardi, I believe it was. And one of his famous quotes is, success unshared is failure, and that's the truth. I've been on the set of Shark Tank, hung out with Mark Cuban for a day. And he also has a great quote. It doesn't matter how many times you failed, you only have to be right once. And boy, was he right once, selling his broadband company to Yahoo. They never used it or launched it, and he sold it for several billion. So yeah, you only have to be right once, and he was for sure. I've traveled all around the world, following or stalking my favorite band, U2. Here I am in Tokyo at the Grand Hyatt, And when I was deciding which hotel I was going to stay at, it was either between the Park Hyatt or Grand Hyatt, Park Hyatt being where they filmed Lost in Translation with Bill Murray. And so when I decided on the Grand Hyatt because it was brand new. And when we got there, we noticed that there was a lot of Caucasians walking around with an Irish accent. So we said, hey, maybe the band's staying here. So my brother-in-law and brother, who went with me to go see them in concert, we would meet up on the club level each evening. And one evening, I walk up to meet my brother-in-law and brother. And as I was walking in the club level, I noticed Larry Mullen sitting with these two Asian ladies. I guess that's what you do when you're a rock star. But anyway, so I said, hey, you know what that means? I said, there's Larry. That means the entire band is here. So we went out that night, had dinner, and we came back to the hotel. Larry was in the lobby of the hotel, sitting down, talking to, you guessed it, two other Asian ladies. And so we started to approach them, and his bodyguard stood up and said, hey, you know, you can't get close. And he goes, no, that's okay. Because I had introduced myself when we were in the club level. He said, that's okay. They're from the United States, and they're here to see our show. So we just asked for a picture, and he gave us a picture. But this particular picture, because this is the Edge. So we had gone to the concert, which was about an hour away from Tokyo. And when we got back, we went up to the club level to see if the band was hanging out. And since we had our lanyards on, as we were getting out of the elevator, we looked around the corner. The lights were out. And we were about to get back in, but then the Edge and his entire entourage comes around the corner, and so we just asked him to get a picture, and as you can tell, he was very thrilled to take a picture with us. One of the funnest things I've ever done is attend the San Fermin Festival in Pamplona, Spain. That is basically the running of the bulls. The event kicks off on July the 6th of every year at 12 noon. And we're on a balcony looking down. I've been to this event four times, and I've been down the bottom one time. It's better to be up in the balcony. Here they are holding their red scarf to symbolize the blood of Fermin and the saint. And at 12 noon, the mayor launches a bottle rocket, and the festivities kick in. And it's basically everything the United States celebrates condensed into 7 days. And it's basically a festival that begins on the seventh day of the seventh month and lasts for 7 days. And I've also been down there once. And the next three times I was up in the balcony. But I did not run. I got kicked off the course because there were so many people there the first time I went, because the date was July the 7th, or 777 is when I went. And, of course, every evening there's a bullfight, which is not really a fair fight, so I'm not going to talk about it, other than the pageantry is beautiful, but the actual bullfighting is kind of disgusting. Been to Dubai several times. I've also wrestled in Nara, Japan with a sumo wrestler, and that's me on the right, if you can't tell. I had to put on that fat suit there. But anyway, that was an experience, to say the least. Here I am at the Hotel Fasano on Ipanema Beach, right at the end of Mardi Gras. And we had, our room was room 707. And I remember that room number specifically because when we got to the room, the gentleman who brought up our luggage was telling us that Madonna had just stayed in that same suite. And all I asked him was if they had sterilized the room and all to make sure it was clean. Yeah, room 707. It was one of the most beautiful suites I've ever stayed in. And, of course, I've been to Prague. Here I am at the Hotel Augustine drinking the Deborah Harry drink there, and you can see her in the backdrop. And then I've hung out with the Czar of Talk Radio quite a bit. Some stories I can share and some stories I cannot. This one here, though, is one of my favorite because it's something that I'm going to share with you as to why I believe I'm standing here on this stage today. But that night, Tillman Fertitta sent his helicopter to pick me and Michael up and Larry, our friend, Jerry McGill, to take us to the Golden Nugget on opening night there in Louisiana, Lake Charles. I don't know about you, but I've never ever hung out with the owner of a casino, and now the Houston Rockets, of course, but a casino on opening night. It's very rare the casino's open, and it's very rare you're ever going to spend time in the night with the owner. So here we are hanging out on his yacht. And that's actually a little yacht. That's 165, 70 footer. He now has a 245 footer. I will never own a yacht in my life. I promise you that, no matter how much money I ever make. That's just not my thing. So there. And then here we are at Michael's house hanging out with Tillman again and Beaver Applin. So yes, the owner of Bucky's is Beaver. And me with George Bush in 2005. I was invited, I was on the short list, to talk about Social Security reform. And the one thing I remember about this experience was, here I am, I'm sitting to his left, and he spoke for like 30 minutes. It was about, the event lasted for about an hour, but he spoke for about 30 minutes. And every time he panned my direction, all the shutters behind me would just go off, all the cameras. But there was only six of us on stage. And it was obviously an honor to being the president of a president of the United States. You know, but despite the humble beginnings of starting the company and despite the success, I'm always aware that success is a terrible teacher because it will give you the illusion that you can do no wrong and it will cause you to make mistakes if you think you arrive, because you never arrive. And I always ask myself, how the hell did it happen? How am I even here? I was a C student in school, at best. I mean, I'm really bragging there. I was probably more like a D student. I had no college degree. I got married at 18, two kids by the time I was 25. I lost a house to foreclosure. I returned a vehicle at 27, and it was a Ford Bronco. Payment was $420.91, and I always remember the hard numbers, but I remember dropping the vehicle off back at the dealership because I couldn't afford it. I had to go down in size. I remember buying a little B2000 pickup truck. But $420.91 was a hard payment for me, and I remember dropping the vehicle off, walking away from it, turning around, looking at it one last time, and telling myself that I'm down, but I'm not out. You know, failure should be our teacher, not our undertaker. Failure is delay, not defeat. It is a temporary detour, not a dead end. Failure is something we can avoid only by saying nothing, doing nothing, and being nothing. Everything you want in life is on the other side of failure. Everything. This is what the organizational chart looked like in 1993. It gets better. In the restaurant industry, we deal with the two most volatile things in the world, people and food, and they both need constant attention. Every business has something you got to be laser focused on maintaining. But this is what the organizational chart looks like today. My son joined me back in 2014. I didn't go to college. He went to college. He went to not only Yale University and did all 7 years there, got his master's there. He's a licensed architect, but he also went to Wharton and got his MBA. And I contribute all that to his mom. He took after his mother for sure. Oh, let's see here. There you go. Well, a lot of the reason why I believe Gringo succeeded are these particular habits that I've really practiced and live by because I know they work. One of the first books I ever read that grabbed my attention was The Law of Success in 16 Lessons by Napoleon Hill. Actually, one of the chapters is the chapter of doing more than paid for. It's one of the easiest ways to get noticed, especially when you're starting out. Because you got to, you know, if you go head to head with a company that's established, has their systems in place, it's going to be much harder for you to get recognized with no experience. So, doing more than paid for. One of the things we do at our restaurants is we give free ice cream away at the foyer when guests leave. It's just an added value. We do the green sauce. Not every restaurant does green sauce. Of course, we do chips and red sauce, but not every restaurant does green sauce. So the ice cream is something we did. There was a restaurant in East Texas that was doing it. We just borrowed the idea. And I remember when we opened up our second restaurant in La Porte, this gentleman who was with another chain of restaurants, and I'm not going to mention the name, but he came along with their executives to visit the new Gringos in La Porte, Texas. And I know him very well, and we were talking as he was leaving. And he was asking me, Russell, what is the ice cream costing you? And he said, and I said, well, and before I could even answer him, He said, yeah, we tried it, and it cost us X percent, so we did away with it. And he's telling me this story while he's eating an ice cream cone. So, some people get it, some don't. The same company, and again, I'm not going to mention the the name, because every one of you have probably eaten there. We were visiting a meat processing plant in Pasadena, Texas, called Ditta Meat Company. And as we were giving, they were wanting to do some meat for us, and they never ended up doing it. I'll explain why in a second. But as we were given a tour inside the plant, we walked by this industrial barrel, not the metal barrels, but the cardboard barrels. And inside of it looked like, and the best way to describe it, looked like dog food, looked like pellets of dog food or something. And I asked the gentleman who was giving us the tour, you know, what is this? And he goes, it's a filler. We add it to the ground beef of this company I was referencing. And what they do is they mix in, let's say, 10 pounds to every 100 pounds of ground beef. And what that does, it gives them a yield of 110 pounds. Versus if you cook 100 pounds and you have to drain off the excess grease, where, you know, you yield 85, 90%. So it's a way to yield more food. It's really disgusting because now you're having to eat it and take it out of the restaurant instead of it going in the trash. But that's the mentality a lot of companies have. They want to give less than they should, and the consumer is very smart. They realize when they go into a restaurant and they leave and they don't feel good. There's a reason why, and a lot of times it's poor ingredients. So, but do more than paid for, and one of the reasons why this company never did any processing for us. One of my heroes is Gene Street. Gene Street started Black Eyed Pea many, many years ago. But Gene Street had a philosophy of minimizing the number of times a product is handled from the field to the plate. Because every time it's handled, it deteriorates in quality. So that's the way we approach everything we do at our stores. We really try to minimize the way it's handled. Even something as simple as grating cheese in our kitchen. A lot of restaurants will grade cheese, let's say a 40-pound block. They'll grate it into a huge Lexan container. And then cooks throughout the shift will grab cheese out and put it in a small container to take to put on the line, to use on the line. The problem with that is each time it's handled, it deteriorates in quality. So we grade straight into the third pans that we use on the line. So it saves a step and maintains the integrity and quality of the product. The second habit is develop a high standard of excellence. It makes competing much easier. Trust me. Trust me on this one. Perfection is not attainable, but if we chase perfection, guess what we'll catch? We'll catch excellence. And that's what you should always be doing. You should try to be perfect, knowing that you'll never get there. But let me tell you, the results that you do end up with are a lot better than the alternative. And let's take Bucky's, for example. So on one of those trips to Pamplona, Spain, Beaver Applin was there with his fiance at the time. And I asked Beaver, I said, Beaver, what is it about these clean restrooms? How did it get started? And when he and his first wife separated, he would have his daughter on the weekend sometimes, and he would visit places and have to go to a public restroom with her, and they were disgusting. So he always swore that his stores would always have the cleanest restrooms. And so this is the men's, look how many urinals are there. It's crazy. But they built an entire brand out of clean restrooms, an entire brand. They're, at the end of the day, they sell gas in their convenience store. And then, of course, they've improved at every facet along the area. Plus, they also check out people faster than most convenience stores. So they took the two areas that people hate most about gas stations, improved them, and look what happened. They're building stores in other states now, and I know their revenues are over $1 billion now. When I met Beaver, I think there were like $300 or $400 million, but that was 8 years ago. So we took over a second-generation property to build our first Chimichangas in Pasadena in 2011. And in the dumpster area, there was our mop sink. And this is an item, an area that a guest will never see in a million years, but we saw it. We see it. And in my mind, it was important that it meet the standards that we apply at the front door all the way to the back door. And so we rebuilt our mop sink. That's just one small example of chasing excellence. And the reason I'm going to show you this picture and this picture, let me go back, well, those two pictures, is because you're looking at a 22 or 23-year-old kitchen. I don't know about you. I don't know how many kitchens you've been in restaurants, but they don't look like this, especially at that age. And it's because our team members take pride in their work. And I will say that standards start at the top, because the standard will always be what is accepted by the leadership, always. So this is what we built today. And y'all saw, of course, what we started with, but that's what we built, this College Station. This was our first bar at the original Gringos. And of course, that's what our bars look like today that we're building. And Katy and College Station and Conroe and Tomball next. This was Gringos right down the road. It was on the border property. I believe in hiring professionals. One of them I hired was a gentleman by the name of Davis Wilson. Davis took this building and created magic out of it. Now, you could try to do everything yourself, but there's a saying that, you know, learn through the mistakes of others, because you can never live long enough to make them all yourself. So I'm not going to be an architect. My son's an architect, but he wasn't with me at the time we did this store. And then our state-of-the-art kitchens. In order to achieve excellence, you must always question everything you do. My team and I, my executive team members, we're always questioning and trying to find ways to improve every single day. And the beauty of that is, in order for your competition to keep up, guess what they have to do? They have to do the exact same thing. Okay, develop the habit of giving. There really is something very powerful about giving. And I was fortunate to witness a lot of it as a young kid. My parents, they did missionary work where they would load up a van full of clothes and Bibles in Spanish, and they would drive into the interior of Mexico and drop them off at these villages. They donated land to a church. They sponsored 10 individuals during the fall of Saigon and set them up in Houston as they, you know, made the big move from their country that fell. So I was very fortunate to have witnessed all that. I'm a huge believer in conscious capitalism, that there is so much more to business than simply making money. Money is important, I will give you that. You have to make a profit to survive, but that shouldn't be your primary focus. It really shouldn't. It should be about enriching lives and having a higher purpose. Conscious capitalism is, enriching lives is, and I do believe, the most noble and worthy journey any human being can be on. Several years ago in Pasadena, we noticed that there was some fundraisers going on for a gentleman by the name of Mike Huffman, Officer Mike Huffman. Mike and his best friend, Larry Candelari, were in West Texas hunting, and they were on their way back, and they came across this accident, this U-Haul trailer jackknife. And they did what anyone would do, whether you're an officer or not, on duty or not, but they stopped to assist. And when they did, they were mowed over by an 18-wheeler. Larry Candelari was killed instantly. And Mike Huffman lost his leg. So they were trying to raise money to buy him a prosthetic leg called it's an Autobach X3. And so Mike, we held this fundraiser at our restaurants, and we gave basically 50% of all our sales that day. It was a Tuesday. And I forget the number of units we had at the time, but we wrote him a check for $100,000 to buy a prosthetic leg. Now, here's another interesting story, because you never know when someone's going to be put in your path to help you. And this young lady here, Melinda Johnson, one of her coworkers sent me an email asking me if there was anything we could do for Melinda. And what she needed was, she needed to replace her prosthetic leg. I didn't know she had one, but this team member, her coworker, was telling me that whenever she walked, it would squeak. It was basically falling apart. She had to keep it together with duct tape. So I sent my VP of operations out, John Fernandez, to go meet with Melinda. And after they met, he gave her the instructions to go to the doctor or whoever she has to go to get a prosthetic leg, but to come back and give us some options. So she did, and she came back with three. One was a budget or basic model, middle line model, and top of the line model. So the bottom of the basic model was like 30,000, the middle was like 70, and the top of the line was 100,000. And so John and I met, and we agreed to do the basic model for her. But I did send John back with some special instructions. So John meets with Melinda, sits down with her, says, Melinda, we're going to get the basic model for you. And so anyway, she was thrilled about that. But John asked her a question that I asked him to ask her. And the question was, if money was no object, which of the three would you pick? And she thought about it for a moment. And she said, you know, if money was no object, I guess I would go with the top of the line model because it would allow me to do this and that. And one of them was going to the beach without having to remove her prosthetic leg because of the sand affecting it. And she's a single mom. And so she said, you know, that's probably the one I would pick if money was no object. So John looked at it and said, well, Russell told me if that was the one you picked, then that's the one we're going to get you. So you're looking at another Ottobock X3 prosthetic leg. And I do want to say those are the only two we've ever bought. And we don't go around buying prosthetic legs, but it just so happened these were two of the stories that involved giving, conscious capitalism. Something else, during the late 90s, although I never had severe dental issues, I did have some crowns and veneers put on in the late 90s. And I don't know how many of you have ever been under nitrous gas while they're doing all the work to you. But, you know, your mind just goes into a place and, you know, I said, this is wonderful. I mean, I'm glad I can afford this now and it's not an issue. And so over the years, I would walk through our restaurants and I would notice team members that would have severe dental needs. And so we would approach them in a very, you know, respectful way and ask them if they would like to have a complete full dental makeover. And we've done probably 27, 28 full, complete dental makeovers for team members over the years. And it's life-changing, if you can imagine. You will see personalities come out that you never knew existed. Although this gentleman here, Bethel, he smiled irregardless. He was the most optimistic, happy individual you'll ever meet. And he's a busser, and he got a complete full dental makeover. Impacting lives. Something that I'm involved with is Camp Hope, the PTSD Foundation of America. For the longest time, we've been hearing 22 being the number of veterans that we lose daily to suicide. Well, there was an in-depth report that was just released recently. It turns out it's a lot more than that. It's actually 44, which is crazy. But I'm involved with Camp Hope. It's a peer-to-peer counseling program on the north side of town near the horse track. And I've been involved for like 10 years now. And it's a residence where we will have between 75 to 100 veterans there that go through the 6-month program to get them back straight on the right road. And it is life changing. And like I always tell people, saving a veteran's life is one thing, but what you're really doing is you're saving a family. So obviously, being on the board, I see the financials, and it does cost money. The counselors that are there are usually people that have gone through the program themselves, so it's a very specialized position, and you just can't hire someone off the street. It just can't. And they only trust one another. A veteran will only trust another veteran. And anyway, so it is faith-based, and so I see the budgets. You know, we don't have any reoccurring income streams, so it's just strictly on donations from corporations. But so one of the things we're trying to do is just help that as much as we can as a company. And so we do have a combination plate called the Plato Soldado, which soldado is soldier in Spanish. And we donate $2 from every meal or every dish we sell. And this wasn't the one that was updated, but anyway, we're at over 800,000 on our $1 million campaign to help Camp Hope, but we've done a lot of things. I think over the last 10 years, our company has donated approximately 1.5, 1.6 million to Camp Hope. And I say, If you eat at Gringo's, thank you, because trust me, I don't do anything. I'm the middleman. I just do that. I just want to help where we can with what we have and what we've been given. So the golden rule, in the Law of Success in 16 Lessons, the very last chapter is the golden rule by Napoleon Hill. And this particular chapter made an impact on me because we all know what the golden rule is: do unto others as you would have others do unto you. But he talks about it just a little bit differently, because this is where it's different and this is where you need to pay attention. It has that to do with, of course, but it really begins how you think toward others. There's a lot of people that wish will be kind to someone, and when they turn their back, they talk about them, or you know, don't wish them well. But it's really about your mind, your thought process. And so, you know, I mean, like you were mentioning going to Papacito's and Escalante's, and Howard was just freaking out over it, I guess. But I don't care. I mean, as a matter of fact, I go to other Mexican restaurants because I can't relax on my own. But I really enjoy going to other restaurants to learn, not to criticize. Or, you know, I want to learn. I just want to learn from other people. Everyone has something to offer. So the golden rule is very, very important, because really, when you do wish the best upon others, you automatically wish the very best upon yourself. And it's not something you can just, you know, choose who you're going to wish the best on, and not who, you know, someone else you're going to wish the worst on or something. You have to wish the best upon everyone, every single person. Because everything you do to and for another person, guess what? You do to and for yourself. Period. I surround myself with a lot of great people. You know, I just hire them and I get out of the way. But you're looking at four of our team members. The gentleman on the left, Jonathan Kim, is my chief operating officer. Heather, and Jonathan's been with me 22 years. Heather's been with me since 96. She left to go to school, but she came back. She's our chief marketing officer. Lauren's been with us since 2011. And you'll never guess what department she's in charge of. She's our beverage director for cocktails and all. And she doesn't drink. She doesn't drink alcohol. She's a recovering alcoholic. And she will tell you that it's the best job in the world. And she can do it because she loves going around the office, getting everyone else to taste this, tell me what you think, and describe it to me. And then Danny Hanks, also been with us since he was 17 years old. We create an environment where people don't want to leave. And I want to share this with you. What is your life's blueprint? So I went to a luncheon at Worthing High School about 5 years ago. And this group here, this group of students here, they're part of a Lighthouse for Students program that a suburban mom up in Tomball is in charge of. And so we fed them that day and we did some other fun stuff, but I brought along a set of blueprints to our new Caney store that you can see on the table there. And I was sharing with them a speech that Martin Luther King gave in about 7 months before he was assassinated to a Barrett Junior High outside of Philadelphia. And he was telling them a couple of things. He was telling them about the importance of a blueprint, how when you build a building, you got to have a great set of blueprints in order to have a great building constructed. And so he was telling them two things they have to have. One, they have to believe in themselves. Years ago, when I was attending a Chamber of Commerce luncheon, when I was broke, I'd already failed. As a matter of fact, I remember failing so many times, failure felt normal. But I went to this luncheon, and the lady who catered it did such a fantastic job, and I noticed it. So I made small talk with her, and she, of course, found out that I was working or managing a restaurant at the time. And she asked me if we did catering. And before I could get one word out of my mouth, she said, "Wow, if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will." And boy, was she right. And that was a game changer for me. It was like someone took a 2x4 and hit me upside the head, because it's so true. So Martin Luther King was telling these students, you have to first believe in yourself. But then he talks about, if it is your lot in life to be a street sweeper, that you should sweep streets so well that the heavens, that God himself would say, here lived a great street sweeper. That you would do it better than the living, the born, anyone. You would do it better than anyone. And he would say that you should sweep streets like Beethoven composed music, or Michelangelo painted, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. You should, because he says, you know, be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, simply be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. Because it really isn't by size that you won or you fell in this world. It is about being the very best of whatever you are. I sell tacos for a living, fajitas. I want to be the best at that. Whatever you're selling, focus on that. Be the best. And that is going to be my presentation. I do want to recommend some books. How to Win Friends and Influence People. The Law of Success in 16 Lessons. The Magic of Thinking Big is a very good book. And one I just recently read, audiobooks. I love audiobooks. But anyway, The Power of Community, Howard Partridge. Very, very good book. Peace, love, tacos. Thank you. And if you have any questions that are on your mind that you would like to ask me, do it now, forever hold your peace. Or you can always email me, russell@gringostexmex.com. Thank you so much.
Who has a question for Russell? Questions? All right. I think they want to come talk to you. All right. So you guys, how did you like the habits that Russell shared? Hey, by the way, I need a picture on a phone with me and Russell. We've got video. We've got pictures over there. All right, so get this. At the party before we went on the trip, they wanted everybody to get to know each other. And so Denise and I put three of our hardcover books, of my hardcover books, together in a gift bag for each of the people who are going on the trip, each of the couples. And there were 25 couples, I think. And gave them as gifts because I wanted everybody to know who I was, and I want to know that, you know, I had added value to them. And we get to West Palm Beach, and the first time I actually talked to Russell on the trip, he goes, I should probably get you to write my book for me. I was like, write your book? So this man has written some phenomenal content around these 10 habits. And I've been compiling that content, and next year is going to be their 30th anniversary. And you're going to see a book come out called The 10 Habits of the Master Enchilada Roller by Russell Ibarra.
Yes.
And compiled by myself. So I have loved getting to know this man, and so I said, okay, so I, you know, the trip is kind of crazy. And so I said, look, let's have a call after the trip to talk about this. And the first thing I said to him is, I said, if I'm the right person to write this book, he goes, oh no, you are. Because I listened to your Power of Community. We have the same values.
Identical.
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 Values.
I'm reading the book. I said, okay, this is me writing the book.
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah.
So that's why. It was no chance. It wasn't an accident that we met.
Right.
I think it was intentional, and I just want to say thank you, because I value relationships a lot.
Yeah.
And so this is just another one of those that they say you're what the average of your five closest friends or the people you hang with. So choose carefully. I always wanted to be like Pappas restaurants, and when I opened my second restaurant, I hired a gentleman by the name of Joel Perkins to be my second general manager, because I told myself I had two choices, either go work for Pappas or hire someone from Pappas. I chose the latter. What I didn't know when I hired Joel, though, that he was going through his own difficult times. He had been demoted from Pappas, relocated, his salary was cut by 2/3, and his fourth daughter was just born. Now, that was in 1996. I licensed him his first store in 2000 at Fuquay, Gringos of Fuquay. He went on to open four more, so he had five units A year ago, October 11th, we did an acquisition, acquired all of his units, and he is now retired, and it was a eight-figure deal. And he's set, and he's our landlord at two of the locations now. So, I mean, you can't write that. You can't write that. But I always told Joel, because Joel's, he's just a great human being, but he's always been kind of my moral compass, if you will. So it's always important to have one of those in your life too, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's an honor to help you get your message out, and I'm honored to be your friend. Thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Give it up for Russell Ibarra.
Thank you.